Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps show. I'm your host, as always, Larry Lease. And on today's episode of Murder Monday, we dive into the Spreckles Mansion case. Let me know your thoughts on this case after we're done. Let me know your theories, what you think happened. And with that, let's dive into today's case. Our case this week begins in Coronado, California. Coronado is kind of like an island with a bridge coming out of it into San Diego. And the island is very beautiful. We're talking huge mansions, just really a luxurious area. It's in California, the beach is nearby, you know what I mean. But on Coronado, there's one specific mansion that holds a bit of history. It's called the Historic Spreckles Mansion, and it was named after the Sugar King when it was built. The Spreckles Mansion had multiple grand staircases and probably more bathrooms and bedrooms than anyone would actually want to clean. But in 2011, the beautiful Grand Spreckles Mansion was tainted. The architecture and design splashed with darkness when someone found something near one of the mansion's spacious balconies, a body hanging from the balcony by a rope. The Spreckles Mansion now turned into a horror movie. You couldn't make this scene up. The Haunted Mansion, all over again. So Rebecca Zahau was born in a remote country at the time, known as Burma, and Rebecca was born into royalty over there. Her family was one of prominence. Rebecca was beautiful and funny. Her friends and family knew her as someone who could put a smile on anybody's face. But Rebecca and her family's safe and secure life in Burma would eventually be overrun by political war. Their beautiful life shattered as they were forced to flee their home for safety. So that is how Rebecca and her family actually ended up in the United States. And despite the tragedy that brought them there, Rebecca had the personality that could take a sour situation and make it awesome. She looked at the relocation as a chance to start a new chapter in her life, to do things she had always wanted to do. And so that's what she did. Once in America, Rebecca worked her way and eventually began her new job at an ophthalmology office, where she worked as a tech. So she would get people ready for surgery at the office, and she loved it. She loved the education of all of it. She loved helping people. It was really right up her alley. And it was one day during the new life that now 32-year-old Rebecca met Jonah Shackney while at work. He had actually come in as a customer and began talking to Rebecca. Jonah immediately thought Rebecca was full of life and enthusiastic, their connection blossoming right away. And unbeknownst to Rebecca at the time, Jonah wasn't like some of their other customers. Jonah Shackney was rich. He was loaded. The founder and CEO of Menaces Pharmaceutical, which according to the ABC 2020 report on this case, is basically like the Coca-Cola of medical cosmetics industry. So this company is worth billions of dollars. We're talking very big company, and he's the CEO and founder of it. Jonah's Google net worth today says he is a former pharmaceutical executive with a net worth of $3 billion, which includes his assets, money, and income. So that's like the type of money we're talking about that she just met. So when Jonah walked into the office and met Rebecca, she really didn't know the lifestyle change that she was about to get into. As they began to date, Jonah says that both of them loved the outdoors together. They practiced clean living, they loved working out together and hiking, so it was really easy to get along. I know that both of them, when they met at the office, were like instantly, okay, she's cute, he's cute. They were both interested. The attraction was more than just physical. To Jonah, he learned about Rebecca's past and the struggles that she had endured while escaping Burma, and his love for her grew as he admired how strong she was. I do have to say, she's very gorgeous and very younger than him. Not a ton, but she is younger than him. So that's kind of why he's reiterating that it wasn't just a physical connection. And most people looking in from the outside could say that Rebecca just stumbled into her fairy tale. A great guy with great money who could make it so she could never, you know, have to go through the trauma that she had experienced just previously. But Rebecca's family wasn't having it. They didn't support Rebecca's new relationship. How serious it had grown so fast. They didn't trust Jonah, and his dating record was a little more decorated than they would have preferred. He had been married multiple times and had two teenagers from his first marriage and a little boy named Max from his second marriage. So there were three kids. And Rebecca didn't have any kids, and she had never been married before. Which I feel like being a rich corporate executive CEO type guy, yeah, you're probably going to have multiple marriages. I mean, I wouldn't really be surprised if he did. But that's what they think. And as this relationship between them progressed, Rebecca began to stay at home with Max and take care of him as her own. Despite the fact that Jonah had not popped a question yet, and this is what bothered Rebecca's parents, he obviously had no issue with getting married, so why would he not ask Rebecca to marry him? So at this point in time, she was 32, he was 54. Instead, she stayed at home, took care of his kids, is how they saw it. Like, she was just basically playing mom, almost like she was a live-in nanny instead of Jonah's wife. Jonah's better half. His resume is very decorated still. It was like CEO of this, founder of this, you know, like, he did 1,000 things. Like, it took me so long to get through it. So once again, this is how her family is seeing it. I'm not saying this is how it was or how it wasn't. I wouldn't know, I wasn't there. But this is how her family is seeing this relationship. But despite these accusations, Jonah claims that Max and Rebecca had an amazing relationship. Max is his little boy, which is why they spent so much time together. He says that Rebecca was such an attentive and warm person with Max. Because she had no children of her own, she really took Max under her wing. Jonah insists that Rebecca was a good influence on Max, and they loved each other. But like I said, Jonah had been married before, and Max still had a birth mother who was in the picture. Which, as suspected, began to create problems in this fairy tale story. The first marriage was to Kimberly James, the founder and president of the Dream and Color Foundation, which is who he had the first two children with. Then he later married Dinah Shacknai, a postdoctoral child psychology fellow in Scottsdale. Together, they had Max Aaron Shacknai, which is Max, who was born on June 7, 2005. After their divorce and Jonah moving Rebecca into the Coronado Spreckles Mansion home, where she ended up taking care of Max full-time, Dinah, Max's birth mom, was irate. She says that the fact that somebody else was taking care of her 6-year-old son was hard, and she wanted to meet Rebecca. But she didn't disapprove of Jonah's new girlfriend being involved, it was just difficult. Like, why couldn't Jonah just raise him?
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Rebecca's family, however, claims that Dinah and Rebecca had an awful relationship, and things had been bad between them from the start. And Jonah backs this up, claiming that, yes, Dinah had made it really difficult for Rebecca since they had started dating, and that Dinah and Rebecca were definitely not friends. But despite the drama, the dirty laundry of their blended family, nobody was expecting what happened next. Nobody was expecting the movie-like story that would soon unfold in this relationship. On July 11th, 2011, so we're only talking 14 years ago, Jonah woke up and left to go to the gym to work out in the morning. Back at the Spreckles mansion is Rebecca, her teenage little sister, Zena, and six-year-old Max. Okay, Zena was just visiting Rebecca at the mansion that morning. She was in one side of the house, which I'm assuming was like the guest area. Rebecca was on the other side of the mansion, probably in her regular master bedroom living area, and Max was playing on the second floor of the house, like six-year-olds do. It was at this point that Jonah Shacknai and the police department both received a devastating call. There had been an accident. Six-year-old Max had somehow fallen over the banister and was now lying on the main floor. Jonah obviously rushed home and found Max lying on the floor. Max was then rushed to the Rady Children's Hospital, and Jonah and Dinah both followed him there, unable to leave his side. So now, birth mom Dinah is also at the hospital with Jonah with their... I can't even imagine. The nightmare's already taken place with drama between the two girls. Yes, so Rebecca told everyone that she was in the bathroom when Max fell, and she ran out and found him. She had no idea how it happened. Zena, her little sister, remembers running out and seeing Max on the floor as well. Rebecca was also confused at what happened. This is what Zena is saying. Rebecca told Zena in that moment that Dinah was going to kill her because she had not been watching him close enough. So this is the first thought going through her head, because kind of like what she said, she was acting as guardian over six-year-old Max at this point. And he had been hurt on her watch. And now Dinah, his birth mom, is going to be really mad at Rebecca, considering their relationship is already on the rocks. So while Dinah and Jonah were stuck at the hospital waiting for news on Max, who was alive but struggling, police created a 3D rendering of what they think had happened based on Max's injuries and the kind of scene where he had been found. One railing on one side, that is the top floor, a middle landing with a railing perpendicular to that, and then you turn the corner and it goes down. That railing directly across from the top railing, and then you're on the main floor. Like, pretend you're drawing out a box, one line, two lines, three lines, but now make those like staircases with a landing in the middle. They claim that Max was playing on the top floor when he somehow fell over the top railing, hitting the chandelier, which then knocks out of the ceiling and falls to the ground. Max continues falling with the chandelier, hitting his back on the downward sloping railing that's going to the main floor, and finally falling face flat on the main floor. No one was running and slipped. The only two adults home, Zena and Rebecca, were both in different rooms, so no one actually knew what had caused the fall. He had injuries to his spinal cord and facial bones, which doctors initially concluded affected his heart rate and breathing. So it was kind of the injuries that made it really, really hard. He was really struggling. All this is so awful, and every friend and family member is devastated. Like, six-year-old Max is literally stuck in the hospital. This is where Jonah Shacknai's brother, Max's uncle, named Adam, came into town to help in whatever way he could, just like family would if there was a tragic accident. Rebecca had been staying at the home, still kind of taking care of things because she's not going to the hospital with Dinah. So she's back at the mansion, just kind of watching over things. So on July 12th, she dropped her sister, Zena, off at the airport to fly home, and at the same time, picked up Adam, Jonah's brother. Rebecca drove Adam back to the mansion where he would be staying, and later that night, her, Jonah, and Adam actually ate dinner together with a friend named Howard. Now, I don't want you to think this is weird. Jonah stayed most of his time at the hospital, but he would leave for breaks and to eat and whatnot. Like, he can't just stay there full time. So this brother got into town, he made his way home, and ate dinner with them. Now, at some point that night, neighbors noted loud music coming from the mansion. And also at some point, Jonah returned back to the hospital to be with Max and Dinah. Adam was staying in the guest house. Rebecca was in the main house of the mansion. The next morning, July 13th at roughly 6:45 a.m., a 911 call came into the police department once again from the Spreckles mansion. The call, quote, said, "Yeah, I got a girl hung herself in the guest house. It's on Ocean Boulevard across from the hotel. The same place that you came and got the kids yesterday." So Adam was the one that made the phone call and spoke with a 911 operator. He's reporting that Rebecca had hung herself from the balcony of the Spreckles mansion. While on the 911 call, he can hear him cut her down and begin chest compressions before fire and medical get there. By the time help had arrived, Rebecca was already dead. Okay, Adam texts Jonah, who's back at the hospital with Max, and explains that he needs to call him right away. So when Jonah calls, Adam breaks the news. Rebecca had taken her own life. Jonah was sitting in a hospital with his struggling sons, and had just been told that his girlfriend was now gone. Yeah, everyone's confused. This couldn't be real. Like, how does this happen? It was days apart. Both at the mansion. Like, what's going on? When police arrive on scene to respond, the state of Rebecca's body does really not look like self-elimination. Rebecca was naked, like butt naked. Her feet bound violently together with red rope wrapped over and over and over again. Her hands tied behind her back with the same red rope. A t-shirt was wrapped tightly around her neck three times and then gagged into her throat. Rebecca did all of this and then somehow hobbled off that balcony. So why, and furthermore how, is what everyone's thinking. Just seems impossible. A graphic and bizarre death at the mansion. Due to the nature of the scene, San Diego PD launched a full investigation into Rebecca's death. The police report shows that one end of the rope was tied to the bed up in the bedroom, where it was then guided all the way out over the balcony and around Rebecca's neck. There was also a witchcraft book found on the bookshelf that showed images of a naked woman with her hands tied behind her back with red rope. Also on the floor of the bedroom, there were two kitchen knives, one smaller and one bigger. The bigger knife had what appeared to be small traces of blood, but Rebecca had no open wounds. It wasn't like she was stabbed with that knife. Rebecca was menstruating at the time of her death. Small blood deposits were found in the house that were Rebecca's, despite the fact that she had no bleeding wounds. But the most puzzling piece of evidence found immediately at the home was actually right on the bedroom door. "She saved him, can you save her?" was scribbled on the door in black paint. Two small paintbrushes with Becca's prints on it were found on the floor in the bedroom, as well as a black tube of paint with no prints on the body, just Rebecca's thumbprint on the cap. Now, originally it was the Coronado police that responded to the scene, but their 911 department was small. It certainly wasn't equipped to handle a case of this magnitude. I mean, they're in Coronado. It's not like they're doing homicides all the time. In fact, police actually left Rebecca's nude body tied up and uncovered out on the lawn so long that media helicopters were actually able to take pictures of her. And it took 12 hours after her body was discovered for the medical examiner to even arrive and begin looking at the scene. Which is not okay. They also didn't even have a full-time homicide unit. So fairly quickly, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department was called in. Like the Coronado police were like, "We're not handling this. We're not equipped to do this." At this point, neighbors are also interviewed, and one neighbor claims to hear screams of help coming from a woman the night before. Adam, the brother who found her, he was there the entire time. It was just them two, home alone. So Adam was given a polygraph test the day that they found Rebecca's body, and the results were inconclusive. Gee, wonder why. But in all actuality, my gut says right now, I don't think it was him. It just seems too obvious that it would be him. I mean, technically, he was the only person at home with Rebecca that night. But Jonah claims that this is the exact problem. His brother Adam is a good person. And just because he was at the wrong place at the wrong time, his life was now being turned upside down. All fingers pointed at him. He was the only guy home, right? And to really put the last twist in the case, to make matters so much worse, as everyone is trying to figure out what really happened to Rebecca just 3 days after her death, 6-year-old Max suddenly dies in the hospital. So within 3 days, two people died at the hands of the now infamous Spreckles Mansion. The once beautiful and spacious home, now holding mystery and darkness that no one could scrub out. But with the investigation into, honestly, both deaths now buzzing in the air, Rebecca's family feels like absolutely Rebecca did not take her own life. That they heard Rebecca say the words, "Dinah's going to kill me," days before she died. And on the other side, Dinah is begging police to look into her son's death more, as now it had been ruled an accident, but she doesn't believe it is. She thinks Rebecca had most likely done something to her son and then thrown him over the banister. So I think this next part is ironic because we are now about to have our third eyewitness neighbor come forward and claim that they saw something. And honestly, it all seems a little like Salem witch trials to me. But we'll still mention it because there are three eyewitness accounts from that night. An eyewitness says that the night of Rebecca's death, they saw a woman matching Dinah's description walk up to the mansion's front door late into the night. But as days turn to week, no arrests are made. No news is delivered. And to be fair, I think you could sneak into this mansion because it's so big that you can get in without anybody hearing you, and then you could kill somebody if you wanted to. Until randomly, police announced they're doing it, they're holding a press conference about the whole case. They answered everyone's questions. They have figured out what has happened. And this is what they have to say, 7 weeks after the deaths of Rebecca and Max. They asked the question at the press conference, were Rebecca and Max's deaths homicides? Their firm answer after several weeks of investigation, no, neither Rebecca or Max's death involved criminal conduct. They say Max tripped over the railing, grabbing the chandelier, and he probably just tripped over a ball or the dog or something. Which I don't buy. Max's, I'm not sure about, but Rebecca's, I just feel like there's no way. Tie your own hands behind your back, like, nah, it's kind of fishy. So all the fingerprints were from her in the room. The DNA all on the rope is from her as well. And the boot print that was found on the balcony, accidentally left there by an officer, and the neighbor hearing the police for help, all a lie, she was lying, they claim. Toe impressions on the balcony confirmed that Rebecca had moved up to the balcony and thrown herself off, like leaning off and taking her life. They even showed a video of a female officer recreating the same bindings on her hand, which like basically involved her slipping a hand, like tying them up, slipping a hand out, moving them behind her back, putting them back through the ties, and then kind of like tugging it tighter. So was it possible that she could have tied her own hands that way? Maybe. Okay, yeah, maybe. But they did quickly mention that there was more DNA, not from Rebecca, found on the larger knife that was in the room. But the DNA was too small of a sample to test. They also say there was foreign DNA on the doorknob to the balcony. But once again, the DNA was too small to test. Of course it was. And the last foreign DNA from the crime scene was found on a pair of gardening gloves on a coffee table. But once again, say it with me, too small to test. So any DNA that doesn't belong to her was too small to test. Everyone in the crowd is dumbfounded. Like, yes, this could be true, but probably. It just seems weird. Like, everyone's like, what happened at the Spreckles Mansion? And why would Rebecca take her own life anyways? Police say that's because Jonah had actually left her a voicemail that night explaining the grave condition that Max was in, and police claim that Rebecca knew it was at her hands, that she wasn't watching close enough. She couldn't bear it. Both Dinah and Rebecca's families are devastated by the news at the press conference. Rebecca's family felt like, you know, no one cared about her, that they didn't even want to investigate it. They believe that someone who held her responsible for Max's death then killed her for it at the Spreckles Mansion. So they decide to exhume Rebecca's body and have a different doctor perform another autopsy. And this doctor determines that the head wounds, she had 4 head wounds on her head, The first coroner credited them to the fall, but this doctor says they might actually be like blunt force trauma from a struggle with somebody. There's no way the way she fell, she wouldn't have actually hit her head on anything. And this doctor concludes that the ropes that Rebecca supposedly tied herself with were tied so tight that they left bruises on her ankles and her wrists. And there's no way she could have done that herself. At the scene, this would be really hard to tie them that tight. I mean, your ankles, yeah, yourself, but your hands behind your back? Seems impossible to me. So also, I do have to mention that when the police recreated their drawing of the knot so that she, like, got it to wrap around the top of her wrist and then tied it with the knot at the bottom, right by the wrist. Because that's where only your fingers can reach. But on Rebecca's body, the knot was at the top, up on her forearms. You couldn't bend your arms up there and, like, tie it clear up there. You know what I mean? So they're like, oh, yeah, this knot is possible, but the knot was actually reversed. And, you know, on top of this, Rebecca's family also petitions for the police to reopen the case. They're like, please, don't close this case. Can you just take another look into it? But that petition is denied. And Dinah feels like there's no way her son's death was an accident as well. How does a 6-year-old get over the tall railing initially? Unless he was climbing on it, I guess. But that was like a pretty far drop down. So it would be a weird place for a 6-year-old to be climbing. It also would be hard for a 6-year-old to get all the way up and then fall. And also, like Rebecca's family, she turns to the media for help. She's asking for a new look. She's hiring experts to look at the fall. And both of these families are going on Dr. Phil, CNN, and probably blaming each other. Like, Dinah thinks that Rebecca hurt her. Rebecca's family probably thinks Dinah killed Rebecca. So it's just one big mess. And both of them are like, now that the police have closed it, they're now turning to the media for help. So they're going on all these shows, like trying to say, here's the evidence that we know. There's no way it could have been an accident. So actually, in 2011, this case was in the top 10 most Googled cases for the year. So here's some points that could possibly poke holes in the findings of the police when it comes to Rebecca's death, which this is the evidence I'm going to tell you. So one point is, how was Adam's DNA not found on Rebecca's body if he cut her down and performed CPR? So they're like, oh no, it was only her DNA, there was no foreign DNA, so that's how we know she wasn't attacked. But if Adam performed CPR on her and cut her down, how was his DNA not on the rope that he grabbed? How was his DNA not on her when police claim it was only her DNA on the body and the rope? So also, the binding was very intricate, like we talked about, and it would take knowledge, despite the fact that police said it would be pretty easy. And I'll be honest, I couldn't tie the knot that I saw in those pictures. It was very intricate. It was very detailed. Like, there's no way I could even replicate that just by looking at it. And a rope expert was brought in, and he even says that someone novice would not be able to tie the rope without expert knowledge, and that was a pretty difficult knot. But Rebecca had tied down Jonah's boat on multiple occasions, so maybe she would have knowledge. But also, Adam worked in the boat industry as well and tied knots as well. So, I mean, both of them could have learned to tie an intricate knot. It would also be hard to be tied up, found, and gagged, and then hop your way out onto the balcony, then to literally gruesomely just like throw yourself over without any hands. And then they say she climbed up with her feet, so her feet were on the balcony like footprints. But it wasn't like on top of the box. What police are saying is that she painted the door, tied herself up in the room, then hobbled her way out of the room onto the balcony, which her feet were tight enough that she would have had to hop, and then got up to the balcony ledge and just leaned off. Which is pretty gruesome, like and pretty violent. It's not impossible, though. Like, she could have done it. It's not very probable, but it's not impossible. So, there's something going on here. It's also possible that someone could have thrown her body over the railing without stepping on the balcony. So they did test, they realized that someone could have lifted her up and put her over without actually stepping out on the balcony. But it still would have been hard because they would have had to like lean her body against the railing, So, like, it's all just weird. So there are more holes in the police investigation, despite the shoddy work we already know about, which was like leaving the body out, the medical examiner arriving so late, and the boot print literally on a major part of the crime scene. Like, how did an officer step on the balcony? That's the biggest part of what they're looking at. And another thing that they did wrong is that the drawn-up diagram of the crime scene from the police does not actually match crime scene photos. So there are items in the wrong place. Some items weren't even included in the diagram, which, when we're talking about something as big as a possible murder, this level of work is not okay. There was actually a dryer sheet on the floor of the bedroom in between, like laying in between the two knives that you can see in multiple pictures, but it's never listed as evidence. And even on the diagram, it doesn't exist. It's like it wasn't even there. And I actually learned this. Dryer sheets can thoroughly wipe down prints. Like, people can use dryer sheets to get rid of prints. Why wouldn't you use just like a rag? You could, but they're just saying you could use a dryer sheet. It does the same thing. So if you didn't know, now you do. So Rebecca's family actually went on to file a wrongful death suit against Dinah, her sister Nina, which I think they're twins because they look pretty alike, and then Adam. They're accusing them of teaming up and killing Rebecca, and then staging it as a suicide that night. So because police are like, we closed this case, this isn't a suit that would like end in prison time, just monetary value. So they're like, we're taking you guys to court, a wrongful death suit, and you're going to pay us because of it. But when like everyone starts looking into it, Dinah proved that there was surveillance cameras showing that she was at the hospital the whole night. So she was at the hospital on camera, so she's dropped from the suit, as well as her sister, because you can't be in two places at once. So now, you're left with just Adam. So Adam now is the only target of the suit, and Rebecca's family believes that Adam knew Max was hurt and thought Rebecca was responsible, so he took care of it. Excuse me. They think Adam confronted Rebecca that night, and it escalated, and she was hit on the back of her head before being thrown over the balcony. But at this civil suit, all Rebecca's family attorney has to do is convince 9 out of 12 jurors that Adam more than likely did it. It doesn't have to be solid, doesn't have to be concrete. This is a civil suit for money, not for him to go to prison. And so that is what he sets out to do. His trial starts in February of 2018. So this case happened in 2011, and the civil suit just happened in 2018. According to the market realist, in the end, 9 of the 12 jurors determined that Rebecca did not die by suicide. And the jury ruled that Adam was liable. But because it was a civil trial, it was damages at stake, not prison time. So the jury awarded Rebecca's mother $5 million in damages, plus $167,000 in compensation for lost financial support. In December of 2018, although maintaining their initial ruling after the civil trial results, the Sheriff's Department reopens Rebecca's case. So the civil suit like ends with, you know, oh, he did it. And the police are like, no. Okay, you can say that there, but we're maintaining our stand that he didn't do it. But then months later, they randomly reopen the case. Which clearly means something is going on. So during all this, Adam actually files an appeal, obviously for the findings that are accusing him, like in the civil suit. But Rebecca's family finally agrees to settle for $600,000 and drop the civil suit in 2019, and he agrees. So the civil suit is dropped. They get paid out $600,000, I'm actually assuming by Jonah, and then it's dropped, and that's the end of the suit. Also in 2019, police that reopened their investigation closed it again and said, nope, we're maintaining our stand, this was suicide, which that makes no sense. In 2020, Rebecca's family attempts to sue the Sheriff's Department after they denied the family's request for investigative records. So in March 2021, a judge actually agrees to hear arguments for it in court. So he's like, okay, we'll go through it. We'll hear it. Now, just in November, like literally excuse me, what is it, 4 years ago? I think it's just one of those cases where it's like Coronado wasn't even big enough to have a homicide unit, and then two deaths that are accidental and suicide happened in the mansion within 3 days. I feel like there's no way that Rebecca Tider, I'm obviously not going to say for certain because nothing's proven in court, and I'm also not blaming anyone. Like, I'm not saying Adam did it, I'm not saying Jonah did it, I'm not saying Dinah did it, I'm not trying to get sued. I'm just saying someone, there's some foul play going on. I do kind of agree as well. There were some journals that were found on Rebecca's phone. She was just talking about how she needed to remain strong after everything that had happened, and that she wasn't going to let Dinah, she didn't say Dinah, but these opposing people get to her, that her love with Jonah was enough, and that she knows who she is, and that she kind of feels bad that she gave up all of her life just to live Jonah's life. And now look at the mess it got her into. But never once were any of the thoughts suicidal or anything like that. But the writing on the door? Yeah, there's no way Rebecca did that. And also they're like, oh, well, only her fingerprints were on the paintbrush in the tube. But here's the thing. There was no palette that the paint was squeezed out onto. So the paint was like squeezing on the brush. But remember, there were no prints on the actual tube, just the cap. So how'd they get the paint out? Something weird's going on. Unless there are prints wiped down and prints planted, I don't know. And the neighbor said that she heard screaming, and she continued to say that up until 2020. Like, she testified in everything. Other neighbors said that they saw a woman that they thought was Dinah, but she was at the hospital because of the cameras. So I don't know, but maybe she still saw someone, yep. And the neighbor and the police were like, oh, she could have heard that, she's lying, but the neighbor to this day is like, no, 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 I heard a young woman saying, help me, help me. So we just don't know. I guess we'll see how it ends, how it all plays out, you know, whenever it reaches its final conclusion. But so far, we still don't have a conclusive answer as to who, what happened or who murdered Rebecca. Back in June 2013, the Spreckles, 2 years after this case, the mansion was put up for sale and sold for $9 million, which is far less than the asking price. And then, in its most recent sale in 2020, it sold for only $11 million. And I know $11 million is still a lot of money. I know that we're like, oh, it's so, you know, but it has been tainted. Like, the deaths of it have really stained that house. And it's not going to hold the same value, historic value, the Sugar King. But either way, two people died in this case. Accidental, suicide, homicide, we don't know. But either way, we need to remember Rebecca, we need to remember Max for the tragedies that happened in 2011 in the Spreckles Mansion. Alright you guys, that is the case for Murder Monday, which I believe it was murder. That's why I'm doing it this week instead of, or I'm doing it today instead of calling it a Cold Case Friday episode. But before we do that, before we leave, I'd like to highlight our sponsor, which is NordVPN. When was the last time you thought about your online privacy? I mean, really thought about it. Because if you're using public Wi-Fi, streaming your favorite shows, or even just browsing social media, you could be leaving the digital door wide open. NordVPN is the fastest, most reliable VPN out there, and it's built to actually protect you. It hides your IP address, encrypts your internet traffic, and keeps nosy hackers or greedy advertisers from tracking what you do online. Here's the best part. It works across all your devices, your phone, laptop, tablet, even your smart TV. So whether you're working from home, at the airport, or just binge-watching from the couch, NordVPN keeps you safe and anonymous with just one click. Oh, and streamers, you're going to love this. With NordVPN, you can access content from all over the world. Netflix in the UK? Done. Sports streams in Europe? Easy. It's like unlocking a global remote control. Right now, NordVPN is offering an exclusive deal for our listeners. You get a huge discount on a 2-year plan, plus 4 extra months, completely free. That's right, 4 bonus months just for signing up through our link. The best part is, it's risk-free. NordVPN has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if it's not for you, no worries, you can cancel anytime. So don't wait until your info gets leaked or your favorite show gets geo-blocked. Protect your privacy, unlock your content, and browse with confidence. Use the link in the description today. Secure your digital life today. And with that, give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit the subscribe button down below. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or scan the QR code that's right there. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.